Those people are what I like to refer to as wrong. No, just like PBR, just because it may be coming back in popularity doesn't make it any better. PBR is still a crappy beer. It is disgusting. It is one step above Schlitz malt liquor. It is not
good. I'm going to disagree slightly there. Well, I'm going to say it's not a good beer. As far as cheap beers go, it's the least bad of the cheap beers that I can think of. It certainly beats Natty Ice all the hell.
Oh, well, Natty Ice isn't even... I don't even classify that as beer because it's like 50% chemicals made to try and taste like almost beer. I drank half a can of Natty Ice one time and had a headache. Half a can. I couldn't even get a whole can down before I already had a headache. I'm like, this is... No, I don't need to drink this badly.
And it still beats Beast, and it still beats Bud Light.
Well, like I said, I put it one step above Schlitz, which I put above, I put Schlitz above all those things. So it's all good, but that doesn't make it good. Being the better than the ultra crap doesn't make it good. And for me, this one is definitely the worst of the films, of the official Eon films. I don't know. I'll have to give it some real thought if I think this is worse than that, than God Smart Jimmy Bond. That was just so rough. Maybe if I'd have been drinking like you were when you watched it, I didn't get a chance to. I was watching it at work on YouTube, so I couldn't drink while I was watching it. Maybe if I had. But no, this one, I mean, right from the very beginning, I mean, we have an opening sequence that, first of all, just doesn't make a lot of sense right from the get-go. Plus, it's really slow. It's really dark. I'm not sure if they were intending for us to think it's being filmed at night. It obviously doesn't come off that way.
This is the unfortunate filming convention that you see in a lot of things. We discussed this when we were talking about the earlier episodes, the original Connery films, where nobody filmed in true night. You would see it very, very rarely, but often they would film at twilight and pretend it was night, or they'd put a dusky filter over the camera and film just in broad daylight.
Right.
And it was just really bad. It wasn't even necessary, but they did it anyway. And you see that here, and you also see, and this is something I particularly do not like, the exaggerated camera tricks which are used in every single combat scene, which basically makes me not believe any of them.
Right.
It's equivalent to it's very much the 1960s equivalent of the overuse of wire work.
Right.
Once it became popularized in the West with the Matrix, because it makes every combat scene look fake.
Yes.
Maybe George Lazenby is actually as athletic as everybody says he is. I don't know, because I'll never believe it. Because looking at these scenes, it's all sped up camera tricks, frames cut out, or you see them fighting in shadow. So maybe it's not even him anymore. I hate every single fight scene in this movie.
Yes, they're all just so rough. And then exactly, and the camera work changes so drastically from the rest of the movie to the fight scenes, and especially that sped up stuff. It's so blatantly obvious. It's so obvious. You know, basically, it shows, you know, they were fighting in slow motion, and they sped up the camera to make it look like they were going regular speed. But everything, it's so obvious that it's just like, oh, guys, stop. It would be better there'd been better fight scenes in earlier movies, so obviously just use the same techniques they were using.
I mean, yeah, they did do the camera speed up thing in the other movies, and I didn't like those either, but it just got more and more blatant now, because the guy who edited those movies is the director here.
So he's like, I can do it as much as I want. Yeah, it's just the fight scenes are horrible. And then, of course, he does what I think should never be done in a Bond movie. I don't mind it in some movies. I don't mind it, especially in true comedies. But I don't think Bond should ever break the fourth wall.
No,
and the
never.
Fact that he does it in the opening scene, the opening sequence of the movie, it throws off the rest of the film for me completely. You know, when he turns, it looks right at the camera and says, that never happened to the other fella. Like,
yeah, and it's odd that they decided to do that, because
first of all, the line doesn't make any sense, because the other fella did get attacked by random people all the time. That's what he does. He's James Bond.
I think what he was referring to is he saved a woman from suicide and then she ran away from him. But even then, breaking the fourth wall just, it's inappropriate. And it very much goes counter to what the studio was trying to aim for. Because once they knew they didn't have Connery, they tried to think of all sorts of different things that they could do as they were approaching on Her Majesty's Secret Service. One was that they were considering, and fortunately they didn't, because by not doing this, they probably saved the rest of the franchise for posterity. They considered having it brought into the plot that James Bond had to have plastic surgery so he wouldn't be recognized because his face had become too well known that he couldn't do undercover work anymore. And because they decided not to do that, that made it much easier to transition actors later on, as they would have to several times, of course. And then after they scrapped that idea, then they decided to market it as, well, it really doesn't matter who James Bond is as far as who the guy playing him is, because it's just a character. So then what you had were posters of this hairy-chested guy with his face blotched out and a question mark over it that were many of the major advance posters for the movie, indicating that who cares who's playing him? It's James Bond. That's all that matters to you, isn't it? And then after going to all this effort to try and not call attention to the fact that there's a different guy here, they then call attention to the fact that there's a different guy here.
Blatantly and completely unnecessarily, I might add. I mean, it's just, and like I said, that whole scene is just, it starts out confusing. You see him basically just like, okay, so the girl cuts him off and then he just decides to pull up and stare at her through binoculars and, oh, look at that. She's committing suicide? What's going on here? And then he saves her. She steals his car to go on a short trip back to her car. And then takes off while he's left to fight these random guys who showed up for seemingly no reason whatsoever. It's just the opening sequence doesn't seem to have anything to do with anything. And it's just, it's not like some of the movies have had opening sequences that didn't fit into the rest of the movie. And it was fine because they were cool enough in themselves. They had enough action. They had some funny. They had, you know, did something that you're like, okay, that was a fun little intro. And now we get into the movie. This just, I didn't like it at all.
I can understand why you didn't like it, but I'll disagree that it had nothing to do with the movie because, of course, it did. It very much did. It leads right into the rest of the movie. But
no, what I meant is that I can see where you're coming from, though. To do with itself at the time, like you didn't know what was going on, basically. Whereas most opening sequences, it's very clear cut what's happening. In this one, you were left like, what's going on? And you had to wait until the rest of the movie to explain the opening sequence. That's what I meant by that.
Well, I think really the purpose of this opening scene was to introduce our new James Bond and then have him kick somebody's ass right away. Except, of course, you didn't see him kick anyone's ass because most of the punching was in shadow. And really, really exaggerated, too. I mean, when he threw an uppercut, I'm thinking it's like Ryu in Street Fighter 2. I mean, this thing is like 12 feet in the air.
Yeah. It was just completely unnecessary. And then you had the opening scene, the title sequence, I should say, which I didn't like at all either, because once again, we don't see anything from this movie. Instead, what they show us are a bunch of stills from the other movies.
Yeah, that part I didn't like. I didn't think it was necessary. I think it was a really bad executive decision to make references to all the previous movies, just say, hey, really, it's the same Bond. Look, we've got all these other things before to remind you. Come on, like us. If there were Facebook, we'd be telling you to press that little button now, but there isn't. So just, hey, we're cool. However,
just like in Die Another Day, it's like, hey, guys, no, seriously, this is a Bond movie. I promise. Yeah, come on, guys, where are you going?
Yeah. But before we get too far in, I do want to talk about the first reason that I consider this movie to be abominable. And that is the man they chose to play James Bond, George Lazenby, who had, previous to this film, not acted in a feature film before. He was primarily known for his Fry's chocolate ads in the UK. Mm. He was an Australian model and pitchman, basically. And ironically, he had lobbied hard for the part to the point where he even went to the same tailor and barber shops frequented by both Sean Connery and Cubby Broccoli just to try and wheedle his way in. And in fact, that partially worked because he was able to make an introduction that way. And yet, almost from the moment he got the part, he decided he wasn't going to take it seriously because he felt that with more quote-unquote sophisticated movies coming out that were dealing with more adult topics and the meaning of life and just that kind of salon talk thing, like movies like The Graduate and Easy Rider he came up with specifically, he thought that the James Bond series was kind of passé. And even as he's filming it, he's losing respect for the part to the point where even before the movie premieres, he's telling his agent, you know, I really don't think I want to do this anymore. I'm going to grow a beard and not look like James Bond for the premiere, that sort of thing. So a guy who was not going to respect the part, and I don't think made any indication that he did during the course of the film, and not to... He just doesn't seem British. Of course, he's not. He's Australian. He just doesn't. He never felt like James Bond. Now, that said, do I prefer the idea that he was cast to the idea of Adam West being cast? Oh, hell yes. Because should never play James Bond.
That would have been interesting, but awful. Yes, I love Adam West. Don't get me wrong, but I would not want Adam West as as James Bond.
I wouldn't want Adam West as Sean Connery. Honest.
That would be bad. That would be really bad. But definitely. But there was
yet another guy who was considered and offered the role before George Lazenby, who turned it down because he felt he was too young at the time. As we've discussed before, his name was Mr. Timothy Dalton. That would have been interesting. I have not seen Dalton's work from this particular time period, so I can't say for sure. And I do like the maturity he brought to Bond when he did come on. Mm-hmm. But it's just one of those what ifs.
Yeah, it would have been interesting. I mean, if they'd given him this same script, I don't think that we were going to end up with anything that much better. Like, we would have had slightly better acting, but still a horrible movie. Because I did not like the plot of this movie, the dialogue in this movie. I mean, everything about this movie, basically, I just did not enjoy at all.
Now, this is the one thing I'm going to give a bone to. Well, actually, there's a couple things I'm going to give a bone to in this movie. I have read On Her Majesty's Secret Service. I've read all the James Bond books. Mm-hmm. And it is, in fact, one of the best of the James Bond novels by Ian Fleming. And out of all of the James Bond movies, On Her Majesty's Secret Service is one of the most faithful. It is, in fact, almost word-to-word faithful. And I can tell you that this plot and this story, everything that goes on, it plays much better on a printed page than it does on film. However, I think that's something that a lot of people just do not understand. A great book does not always make a great movie, and vice versa. They are two different media. They tell stories through different mechanisms. They play at your brain in different ways. And there are things that you can describe with words on a printed page that show up in your imagination one way, where if you just blatantly film them, the magic is not there. It's not going to be the same. The same story that's going to be really exciting and really intriguing on a printed page is not necessarily going to be really exciting and really intriguing on film. In fact, it can sometimes be slow and boring.
Yes.
Or not translate. And then another problem as well is On Her Majesty's Secret Service is the third novel in Ian Fleming's Spectre trilogy. Out of all of his James Bond novels, he wrote three that featured Spectre: Thunderball, On Her Majesty's Secret Service, and You Only Live Twice, in that order. And that is very, very important because that's one of the things that really ruins